BetOnline is your number one source for all your betting needs. Get the latest odds, lines, and matchup reports for baseball, boxing, golf, and more. BetOnline continues to be the fastest and easiest way to place your wagers, including live betting and your favorite casino and card games available to play right from your phone. Head to the website or use your mobile device to sign up today and get in on the action. Remember to use promo code BELIEVE for your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. Bet online, where the game starts. Hello and welcome to another episode of the Believe in OK State podcast. I am Megan Robinson, joined once again by Justin Southwell and Eve Batoba. Guys, as of the time of this podcast release, we are 23 days away from kickoff.
Woo! This is about the time that I'm really getting excited. Like, I know y'all were excited a couple weeks ago when we were like around a month or whatever, but now we've got stuff like Hard Knocks coming out. These new things are being released on Netflix with Johnny Manziel. Tim Tebow is coming out pretty soon. And yeah, I just, it's getting a little bit cooler in the mornings now. And I think the triple digit temperatures are waning. So we are looking at legitimate football season on the horizon. And I can't wait.
Ooh, it's beginning to feel a lot like Christmas. And when I say Christmas, of course, I'm talking about kickoff. So yeah, 23 days away, you know, goat numbers away. So can't wait. Can't wait.
So excited. I know this is a college football Believe in OK State podcast. I do have to say, I just watched Hard Knocks. I don't normally watch it the night of because it's on too late for Grandma Meg. And the writing on that show, shout out to the Hard Knocks writers, because I would pay good money to go to a masterclass with the Hard Knocks writers. It is just phenomenal.
I agree. I
had to point that out.
Yeah, since I started watching it, I pretty much watch it every year just because like they do such a great job with the production, with the writing, and everything that goes on behind the scenes. Like that Dallas Cowboys season was so boring from an on-field standpoint, but everything else surrounding it, like the cinematography and all, was phenomenal. So props to them. I hope somebody can do like a pseudo Hard Knocks, almost on like the Whedon to Blackman or like the Zach Robinson, Dez Bryant years. Not, I guess it wouldn't be Hard Knocks as much as it would be more so like the Johnny Manziel thing that they're doing.
It'd be like a 30 for 30.
Yeah, like that stuff would be really cool. Like just putting the program on the map, you know? It'd be cool.
But to Meg's point though, like it's going to take a lot to get me kind of fired up for Lions football, for Jets football. And for whatever reason, Hard Knocks is able to do it every year.
Yeah, they do.
I think all of America became Lions fans last year, and then it was extra special for Oklahoma State fans because Malcolm Rodriguez exactly. was a star on that show, star on the field as well, but you know, one of the top guys featured on that show. And then this year, bringing it back to Oklahoma State in the Big 12, Sauce Gardner is a lead character.
Hey, yo.
So
we're claiming Sauce Gardner.
Cincinnati. I'm just saying, big, you know, since he's Big 12, so that's my connection back. So he was not in the Big 12, but his
legendary Big 12 DB Sauce Gardner.
I like it. Yeah.
I like Sauce, but I, you know, as a Patriots fan, I cannot in good faith like the Jets. And Hard Knocks are they bringing me around? It's one episode in. I will never like Aaron Rodgers. That's neither here nor there, but like.
Are there any Oklahoma State players on the Jets? I don't think so. I think, yeah, just less reason to root for them.
Exactly. We don't.
You know, I root for the Miami Dolphins. You got Emmanuel Ogba down there, so you got an Oklahoma State guy. I tend to just follow the OK State guys.
Man, I don't know why. It's not coming up for me. There was somebody, though, like I know that Rodarius Williams was with the Giants.
Yeah, he was with the Giants.
I feel like there was somebody else with the Jets because I was thinking, oh, we got one on each New York team. But I can't think of who it is, if they're still on the roster or not, so.
I just Googled, well, I'm on the Jets roster, and there is no one from Oklahoma State on the Jets. So we don't have to like them.
Sure.
Several Iowa State guys, K-State. There are a lot of Big 12 players on this team, but yeah.
Including Sauce Gardner.
But none from Oklahoma State, so we don't care anymore. Let's talk Big 12. Let's talk Oklahoma State. The big news coming last Friday night, it was announced that we are getting not just Colorado, but three new teams joining the Big 12 in 2024, Arizona State, Arizona, and Utah. Chad Weiberg spoke at Cowboy Football Media Days on Saturday, and he said that 2 years ago when it was announced that Texas and OU were heading to the SEC, no one really knew what to think of the Big 12, but the narrative has changed drastically in the last 2 years. How would you describe the current narrative of the Big 12?
Well, it's kind of like what you were asking last week about if Colorado made that big of an impact on the Big 12, and it kind of did, but in a bigger sense, like now we're seeing the fruition of that because the dominoes fell. I would say, especially with the last probably decade and a half of what Utah football has been able to do, that strengthens and maybe solidifies the stability of the conference.
Yeah.
Obviously, we're not talking about how any of these teams that we brought in can accumulate to account for what OU and Texas are. But that being said, the conference is looking really strong today because of what your mark has done. And yeah, you just got to, we'll just see how it goes as far as the next couple of years, how other things are shaken out as far as realignment. I know Gundy had some things to say about that, but, and we may get to that later, but yeah, I mean, as far as the perception of the Big 12 still nationally, nobody considers them to be a legitimate playoff contender. Everybody's looking out to the SEC, Big 10, and still even this year, the Pac-12, and maybe even the ACC before they consider anybody in the Big 12. So because of that, somebody has to step up like TCU did last year. But even that isn't enough to change the minds. You know, it's something that has to be year after year after year before they realize, oh, wow, you know what? Maybe TCU actually is better than Michigan, despite beating them straight up. So that's where we're at, I think.
Yeah, to Chad Weiberg's point, when you look at the narrative of the Big 12 just 2 years ago and where they are at right now, even more important, in my opinion, than the Big 12 is what it does for Oklahoma State. We were not bringing in a San Diego State, a Colorado State, one of these, you know, North Dakota states to come into the conference. We're still going to be playing and facing legitimate contenders that are going to give us a chance to get that national recognition and actually make it to the playoffs. So as Justin talked about, it's so much more about, okay, what can we put out on the field that we can actually prove going forward, and less about, you know, what, you know, where we're at right now, or even what these teams that are coming in have done in the past. But one thing I just want to say real quick, I know a lot of credit has been given to Brett Yormark, as it should. I just want to give a little nod to my former mentor, Bob Bowlesby, as well, because a lot of people aren't talking about how major this grant of rights was. Okay, so like, what's keeping like a lot of these teams that are still in here together? The Big 12 Conference is actually the originator of the grant of rights, and it's ironclad. Just to give a real quick brief on what this is for those of y'all who may not know, the grant of rights is a document that every single university agreed to and signed. And once you sign it, you're locked in, right? It was a really, really smart thing for the Big 12 Conference to do. It was filed in Delaware. So if you've ever started an LLC in the past, you know that Delaware is a very business friendly state. Like 65% of Fortune 500 companies are incorporated in Delaware. So this means that if you try any litigation, you don't get to do it in your own state court. It obviously would be more favorable for Texas to do a litigation in Texas, but no, right, they have to go to Delaware to do their thing. So it's backed by a case study from over 115 years ago. So you'd be hard pressed to overturn it today. So the Big 12 themselves, Bob Bowlesby and company, they incorporated themselves as a business. Really, really smart for them to do. And the grant of rights says that if you leave our conference, whatever money you make from TV, we get to keep it all until the contract expires. And no one has ever challenged it. So the Big 12 are, as I mentioned, the originators, and they wrote it after Colorado, Nebraska, A&M, and Missouri left the conference. And then since then, no one has left. You know, people will say Texas and OU, but they waited until the TV deal actually expired. And then they announced that they weren't signing the next grant of rights. But the Big 12 They tried to adjust with Texas and OU. They said that they weren't going to do equal revenue sharing. Instead, it was going to be performance-based revenue sharing. And I'm still curious to know what the revenue sharing is going to be like with these new schools that are joining the conference. But again, as we know, Texas, they paid the $100 million and they bounced. OU, they paid $100 million and they bounced. But everybody else is locked into this grant of rights. And that was really, really smart for us as a conference to do. And we're seeing now that it's paying dividends because we're not getting left behind like a Pac-12 or an ACC.
I did hear that it was going to be equal share.
Is it equal share? Teams. Okay. I mean, yeah. I guess that's fair, right? Performance-based, whatever.
I will say Chad Weiberg did acknowledge Bowlesby in his press conference on Saturday. So Chad is aware that it started with Bowlesby and Brett Yormark is just carrying the torch very, very well. Love I do it. Want to note that I have been very vocal about my dislike of conference realignment and expansion, and I think it's bad for sports. That being said, I do like how we are maintaining the Arizona-Arizona State rivalry and the BYU-Utah rivalry. For so sure. With these new additions, you're not losing rivalries because right. They're staying together, and that's one of the things that I really liked, and that segues into what Gundy said a little bit on Saturday about rivalries and scheduling, and he's very interested to see how the scheduling works for new 16 teams. He said there needs to be you need to create rivalries. We already have two, but our Arizona State, Arizona, Utah, BYU playing each other every single year. Is that guaranteed? He also said you need to make it fair so that the same teams aren't playing each other all the time so that people can't be like, well, how do we know OK State is the best? They only play the bottom tier teams on paper. They're not playing, you know, the top tier teams every year, whoever they turn out to be next season. And yeah. Then he also said you have to think about travel because you don't want UCF flying to Arizona week 3, then flying home for a home game, then flying to Utah week 7, then flying back, then flying out again week 9. So it's going to be interesting to see how the scheduling works next season with a 16-team conference. I think I know how I would approach it. How would you guys approach it?
I'll tell you, well, I don't know exactly how I would approach it, but I will say this, like, I don't want it to become anything like what the NFL currently does. And I'm talking about for really all of college football. I know we've been kind of talking about this power two and everything, but that's really what I want to avoid. And especially the way that it's set up with their divisions, because if we're locked into something regionally and we're playing some of these teams 2 times a year, and we're trying to figure out who's going to be in the playoffs based off of that, I just feel like that would be so boring for college football. I want to be able to see OSU play a different team every single week. So, you know, as far as scheduling goes, all that flying and stuff, I think that's probably just going to have to be, unfortunately, just one of the things that comes with this conference realignment. Yeah. And maybe there's a case where if you're playing somebody on the West Coast, maybe you could stay the week. I mean, I honestly don't know how that stuff's all going to work out, but
yeah.
That'll be a job. Like, somebody's probably going to get paid a lot of money to make sure that these schedules are, you know, top notch.
Yeah, no doubt about it, because you have to think about television and television times. I didn't even want to start thinking about what these TV schedules are going to look like and what these game schedules are going to look like. But, you know, one thing that I do know is that you have to keep the student athlete in mind, right? When you're thinking about, you know, traveling.
Why would you keep the student athlete in mind? We haven't been doing that up till now. I mean,
yeah,
come on.
Yeah. No, you're absolutely right about that. We definitely have not. And if I have an exam or 2 exams in back-to-back weeks or in the same week, when do I have time to study if I'm flying across the freaking country?
On the plane, Eve.
Yeah, man, I'm trying to sleep on the plane, all right? I'm asleep. Where are your
priorities?
And there was 1 year when I worked in the NFL that we were the most traveled team in the entire NFL through, like, the first 5 weeks by far. And that stuff really takes a toll on you. As staff and as athletes, of course. So, yeah, I'm hoping that whoever is behind all of this, the person that's planning all of this, actually has the athlete in mind, because without the athlete, then what the heck are we even doing here?
I personally like the SEC's model, their current model. We will see what happens next year when they also expand, of a East and a West. You play everyone in your division every year, and then you rotate a team in from the other division. I like that model. It keeps it simple. You have opponents. You have rivalries like Florida, Georgia. You have rivalries like Georgia, Tennessee. You have Alabama, Auburn, Alabama, LSU. Those are created by those divisions within the SEC. However, if you look at the map of the Big 12, UCF, West Virginia, Cincinnati are still outliers. Yeah. So they would naturally be in the East. With looking at this map, I would put Iowa State, Kansas, Houston, pick either us, TCU, or Baylor, and put them over there. You know, they're still flying to Texas, Oklahoma, Kansas. It's not convenient for Cincy, West Virginia, and UCF, but there's no way around it based on where they're located.
Yeah, it's similar to what the Big 12 did back when we had 12 teams. We had North and South. Yep. So maybe that makes a little bit more sense for the Big 12 than East-West. I don't know. I'd have to dive into it a little bit more. But I like that where you do play the same teams every year and then rotate every other year. I think it is that you play the other teams like half and half. So by the time that you've been in college for 4 years, you would have played everybody in the conference.
Yeah, I wish the Big Ten would figure out how to do that, because if y'all seen the Big Ten West,
Big 12, that's the downfall of it, because the competition of one of these sides will outweigh the other side, and you end up having like Penn State, Ohio State, and Michigan all in the East playing against maybe Wisconsin or Iowa for the Purdue last year for the Big Ten.
Yeah, last year Big 12 West Division is Purdue, Illinois, Iowa, Minnesota, Wisconsin, Nebraska, and Northwestern. What a joke. You know, all the best teams are all in one division. Now, of course, you know, it's kind of a luck of the draw. Like the way that the schedule is going to end up falling, you just have to play out your schedule, right? If you get a really tough schedule, if you get a cupcake schedule like a Michigan, you know, it is what it is. But, you know, here at in the Big 12 conference, one thing that I actually love so much about our conference is that there's a lot of evenly matched teams. You just don't know what's going to happen on any given Saturday. Whereas in the SEC, maybe, you know, you can kind of tell, you know, they tend to be pretty top heavy, and then the bottom is pretty weak, and then the middle is just kind of, you know, one random team will kind of rise at any given year.
It's true, man. Like even as recently as last year, of course, we saw what TCU ended up doing and going to the national championship, but
Kansas,
you know, Oklahoma State was with them until double overtime when they lost to TCU, and Houston, for example, they're coming into the conference. But I think that they have the all-time they have more won games than OSU does in that series. I think it's like 10-9 or something like that. So it really evenly matched, like, for the history across the Big 12. And it does become one of those things where you might cannibalize your own conference because somebody will end up knocking you off whenever you maybe deserve to go into the playoff. But that's the tough part about college football, man. That's why we love it. That's why we love college football, right?
I'm like Meg. Like, there's a part of me that really just hates this. Like, if you love college sports from a business standpoint, I get it. But like, you would love to see everything to kind of just stay regionalized. You want to see the old rivalries stick together, go together to the new conferences. But this is just a day and age that we live in, and you know, it becomes more and more like the Wild Wild West every day. I think just today was announced, and by today, I mean like Wednesday, August 9th, it was announced that second-time transfers will only be granted a waiver for immediate eligibility for medical or safety reasons. So they're at least trying to hone in. They're at least trying to regulate it in some type of ways. But then you're going to see, you know, the playoffs is going to expand to 12 teams. And then, you know, it's probably going to stay that way for a couple of years. And then people are going to want more. Then it's going to expand to 16 teams. So the changes are nonstop. It's just going to keep on happening. At the very least, you want some of the purity of college sports to remain, and that it doesn't become completely and totally like a business with labors and unions and all that.
Well, we will see in a couple months when the schedules are released, and they could be released in March with all the chaos that is going to be required to figure it out. So college football schedulers.
I do have one more point real quick. So if we are, I think the people in charge really are trying to model this off after the NFL, but I think what they're failing to consider is that the worst teams in the league, if you end up going 0-16 or whatever the case is, you're going to get the number one draft pick.
Yeah.
That doesn't that will not ever translate to college football. You're not going to be able to get the top five-star recruit just because you suck. So, like, I don't know why we're trying – we're focused so much on making the NCAA like the NFL. Let the NCAA just be college football, and it can be a separate product. It's totally fine.
Yeah, and in fact, you know, the NFL is about as close as you get to socialism, right? Not only are you actually getting the best draft pick if you have a worse record, but you're also getting a favorable schedule because you're playing the teams that also finish last in their divisions across the NFL, right? Like whenever you're going across divisions. So in the NCAA, the thing is, if you perform really well, the rich just get richer. You're then able to afford a better recruiting budget. You're then able to get better, you know, better recruits and better facilities and all this stuff. So it's just a gap that is widening and widening. And who is to say that a few years from now, these true blue blood programs are going to look around and be like, why are we letting Maryland like profit off of our name? Or why are we letting Iowa State profit off our name? Yeah, let's just branch off and create our own thing and we'll be fine. All right, we'll be better than everybody else. Now, with that being said, we'll see what ends up happening with, you know, the Saudi Arabians that end up coming in college football. But that's a whole nother topic for another day.
We do not have time to get into your theories, Eve, but what I was going to say before Justin made an excellent point, might I add, I do like that point, Justin, is Godspeed, college football schedulers. You are in my thoughts. So best of luck. Can't wait to see what you come up with. Well,
I do not envy you. I do not envy you.
That too. Do not envy you at all. But I'm willing to talk shop and brainstorm if you need someone to bounce ideas off of, because I got some. So just like hit me up.
All right, the campaign is still on. MEG for CFP. Okay.
Never ending until I get there.
We're gonna bring it back during the season.
Well, the last couple of weeks we have done deep dives on the, I guess it's the four new members, but I guess they're now the old new members because we have four newer members. The four new members in 2023. And we figured it's time we do a deep dive on our own squad. We've talked about how they kind of relate and how we think that they match up with the Cincy, UCF, Houston, and BYU. But we're going to talk about them in their own right. Because, guys, I am excited about this team. I will admit I was unsure about them in the offseason with the transfer portal exodus and what's going on. But I am pretty pumped about this team. They are pumped too. The biggest question going in is who will QB1 be? Gundy said in his press conference on Saturday that all quarterbacks are still sharing reps. He hopes to make a decision by practice 12 to 14, which should be next week, I believe, if my quick math is right. He said the younger guys are improving, and if there are two guys deserving of playing time, they could play multiple QBs. What do you think of that?
All right. So my initial reaction was, are you kidding me? Like, what are we doing right now? But then I thought about it a little bit more, and I get it. Like, why wouldn't you play multiple QBs to start the season, right? Like, get those guys some reps. It's fine. We're playing Central Arkansas, whatever.
Arizona State's not a wash. No,
of course not. But we know Bowman is the starting quarterback, QB1 from then on. So if they're sharing reps, that's great. I'm glad that Rangel is hanging in there and giving him some competition. Yeah. In the case that Bowman goes down, I'd love to be able to have confidence that he can step in and do his job. And I feel like that's like the most positive way you can spin it. But if we are being straight up, it's Bowman. It has to be Bowman, right?
I don't know.
Not. What?
I mean, look, I'm at the point right now where I just don't know. I'm probably 70% sure that it's Bowman, but at 30%, you know, I mean, you know, there's noise about what Rangel is doing out there in practice. Apparently he's made drastic improvements and he's looking good out there. I know Zane Flores, probably the future, give him a couple of years to develop, but you never know. And I'm actually not opposed to the competition. I know in the beginning I was just like, come on, like we got to go and announce somebody so that we can rally around that individual. But the way that thing shaped out last year and the way that everybody got hurt, I'm like, look, the more reps that you can give to a second and to a third guy, the better I am with it, because at least they won't be coming in as cold should somebody get hurt. Knock on wood. Let's hope that doesn't happen. But should somebody get hurt during the season?
In theory, if our running game is as strong as Gundy hopes it will be, a quarterback matters less. Obviously, still important, but if you're a very big threat in the run game, that takes pressure off a QB. Yes?
Yeah, but are you going to want to switch your quarterbacks in and out all the time?
No, I mean, I don't think that really matters, right? I think to Meg's point, like if your run game is that strong, I guess you become a lot more comfortable with whoever is out there, and you don't have to worry so much about switching them out.
I like the idea of a tight competition because it's going to keep, let's say it is Bowman. We'll go with Bowman, QB1. It's going to keep him on his toes and keep him working hard and not get complacent in a game. Because if you know that the QB2 could go in at any second and it's not, you know, if Bryce Young is playing or Spencer Sanders, you know, Spencer Sanders was playing first five games of last year, he knew he could make a mistake and he was staying in the game. Whereas if it's a tight competition and Bowman makes a mistake or two, or does Rangel come in? So I like having that sort of, you got to stay perfect and make minimal mistakes so that you can continue to play. On the flip side, I don't see the point in switching quarterbacks all the time because I think it can also mess with their confidence.
And that's where I was going to push back, Meg. I think the biggest thing in situations like this is you don't want to continue flip-flopping quarterbacks. The biggest reason why is I think oftentimes as fans, especially, you know, the further you are removed from the program, and I'm guilty of this as well, where I'll be like, why not just switch this guy for this guy? But as a coach, especially Coach Gundy being there, one thing that he always has to be cognizant of is managing people's emotions, their confidence, and everything else that goes on in the brain, in the heart, as you're dealing with real human beings and not just, categorical transactions, right? So that's the biggest thing there. So whoever wins it, like, just, you know, at least give him a little bit of a rope, at least before we start to really get going in conference play.
Yeah, I think where this makes more sense is the running back position, where you can afford to, you know, those guys are more willing to kind of share the load. They're not necessarily the vocal leader in the huddle or whatever the case is, relying on the same consistency every down or whatever. So that's where I feel like we should be, you know, hey, let's see how Ollie does this drive. Let's see how Nixon can come in and mix it up, and we'll see how Collins can step in, like how we can play complementary football in that aspect.
And let the person that has the hot hand stay in the game. Because we've definitely messed that up in the past where somebody will come in and will ball out, and then next thing you know, it's like, we haven't seen them in three series. What's going on over there? So, yeah, I'm not
and
mad
then,
at that.
Then it'll be a case where it's like, all right, they're the workhorse. They're tired. And then, boom, you got a fumble. And then we don't see him for the rest of the season. It's like, come on, man, one fumble? Like,
bro, we're talking about Coach Glass here. We don't get tired.
Ollie Gordon had a fumble last year against Baylor, and then he played every game because he said Coach Waz was like, shake it off.
Yeah.
Need you back out there. So I think that also is the mental thing, and you can beat yourself up over, I don't want to say a simple mistake, but you can beat yourself up over a mistake, and you just got to.
Yeah. I don't remember whenever that happened. Was it maybe
Baylor,
Justice Hill against Baylor when he fumbled? And I feel like we didn't see him for a while. And it's like, come on, man, like Justice Hill is kind of clearly the number one running back. I don't remember maybe I'm misremembering that, but that's where my mind was at.
No, it's going to be really interesting. I don't know much about Elijah Collins, who's coming in. Where did he transfer from? Was it Michigan State?
Michigan State.
So he was behind Kenneth Walker.
Yeah. It was going to be tough for him to play over there. But I'm excited to see what he can do. You know, he's put on some pretty decent numbers while he was over there in the Big Ten Conference. So hopefully he can bring some of that production down here to the Big 12.
Yeah, Elijah Collins, 1,500 yards, a little over 1,500 yards, 11 touchdowns in career at Michigan State. He has four career 100 rush yard games. When I was looking up and I was doing some research for this, guys, I was looking up Jaden Nixon, obviously coming back this season. He had 755 all-purpose yards last season, four total touchdowns. Almost half of those yards were coming on kick returns. He had that 98-yard kick return versus Baylor. So obviously that was a big chunk of those 385. But in kickoff return yardage, he ranked among the top 50 players in FBS.
Nice.
Yeah, that's a pretty large sample size. I don't know what to make of that, to be honest with you. I'm like top 50. I'm like, all right, like if it was like top 20, I'd be like, oh wow. But I don't know. It just
but seems- it's out of you know 130 teams. And well, then you've yeah, also got not you've all got two players per team back there that are returning kicks. So you've probably I don't know what Presley's numbers look like, but if both of those guys are in the top 50, then that's looking good.
My point, I guess, is don't sleep on Jaden Nixon.
Yeah.
Because he can be a threat in the run game and on special teams. And I'm not talking in every down back. Maybe he comes in on second, on third, or third down. And Ollie
I'm all right with y'all sleeping on him. It's cool. Like,
well, also fine. Don't sleep on Jaden Nixon. Gordon also said at Media Day is that a big goal for the running back group is 5 yards per carry. What do you guys make of that's a lofty goal.
That's big time. Yeah, that's a first down every two plays, you know, every two carries. Yeah. So, you know, that's reminiscent of the Kendall Daniel days. The Kendall Hunter days.
Yeah.
You know, where he was averaging over 5 yards per carry, except he was the feature back. So I'd love to see that kind of production from, like, a feature back. If it is Ollie Gordon, I would love that. I mean, there's much to be seen even from our offensive line, right? That has a huge – that's a huge contributing factor to yards per carry. But if we can get there, I mean – that's one of the best things that you can ask for right there for our team.
Right. As opposed to 2.3 or whatever it was last year, that was abysmal. But yeah, that's exactly right, Eve. It's not necessarily about the running backs. While it should be their goal, like that should be the offensive lineman's goal as well, because they're the ones that are making that happen.
I did ask. So Jaden Nixon is learning to cook. He lives on his own for the first time.
Let him cook.
He's learning to cook, yeah, on and off the field. And I asked him on Saturday, I said, what would you make your offensive line if they have a great blocking game and you have a great rushing game? Because you know how NFL quarterbacks or running backs will take their O-line out. I said, well, what would you cook for them? Assuming you're not going to take seven guys to a steak dinner somewhere at the Rancher's Club. He didn't say that he would make them steak. He's like, I don't know how to make steak, but I would learn. I would cook it five times before serving it to them to make sure I got it right. So, offensive line, play well, and maybe you'll get that steak dinner from Jaden Nixon.
You don't know how to make steak? What's wrong with you, my guy? Look,
You need to YouTube that, man.
Yeah, you got to go on YouTube. You got to go on YouTube and figure
it out. Figure it out.
If you can get some steak, especially even – here's something easy, all right? I think every college athlete needs to know how to make a stir fry at least, right? A stir fry. Yeah, especially with like some grilled chicken in there. That's really all you need. You get your caloric intake, you're getting your carbs, you're getting your protein, and you're getting your healthy fats. Throwing some avocados in there and some veggies, like you'll be just fine. So at least learn how to make a stir fry with grilled chicken.
Okay, sidebar to cooking, but related to football, because we also talked to Brennan Presley about cooking, because he's also a self-taught chef, and he makes chicken and rice. And he said his specialty, though, is like a chicken quesadilla, but he puts – I forget if it was regular sugar or brown sugar in his rice. Have you guys ever heard of that?
Oh, of course. Yeah.
Yeah, I've heard of that.
Yeah, putting sugar in your rice, yeah, that's a hood delicacy.
I've never heard of that.
I think it's something that's very common in the Black community. I don't know if it's just something that we all grew up with, but yeah, heard of that my entire life. Sidebar, Justin is actually the one – that taught me how to perfectly grill or oven grilled chicken, make that with some rice as well whenever we were roommates. So everything that I know about cooking, I learned it from this guy right here.
Yeah. Shout out to my dad on that one. So yeah, it was just a basic thing that you could probably take 10, 15 minutes to prep, stick it in the oven for, I don't remember, an hour and a half or something like that. And whenever it comes out, man, just
a whole chicken.
It's so good.
Chicken breast.
Yeah, I'm always going with like chicken breast. Keep it lean. It's on a bed of rice, and it's got a mix of cream of celery, cream of chicken. So it's a nice way to like make sure that chicken's nice and marinated. The rice also is able to soak up some of that flavor. So
with a squirt of hot sauce right over the top of the chicken to make it just right. Yeah, that's what we used to do down in the back in the James Creek days.
Interesting. Well, back to football. We can do it all.
Real quick, so tying it in back to football, it was so interesting. Whenever I got to Oklahoma State, I was 165 pounds and I needed to put on weight. And, you know, this was before college programs had nutritionists. and all these, you know, just great staffs that they do.
We were in the wrong era. Yeah.
Yeah, we were definitely in the wrong era.
And especially we have the wrong uniforms.
Because all they told me was like, yo, go to Chipotle every single day. You get the double rice. You go ahead, you get the double meat. And like eat like two burritos every single night. Like just keep going to Chipotle and keep eating them burritos. And that's what I did. I mean, you know, it helped out with the training regimen, of course, but I, you know, end up gaining like 18 pounds in 3 months, which worked out.
Man, literally. We missed out on like training table. We missed out on these vouchers. People got to go to like Chipotle, yeah, Texas Roadhouse, man, like they were just living it up. And the walk-ons were over here making this cheap chicken and rice, you know, just slaving over it, you know, in the kitchen.
You had to know who to talk to, man. Some people didn't even appreciate the vouchers. You just got to, you know, you just had to hustle out of them. And shout out to Rashetti Jones. Rashetti Jones always used to hook people up with his, you know, with his different meals and with his different vouchers, man. He looked out for the guys.
But Eve, you're talking about Chipotle and double chicken, double rice. That's literally what Kendall Daniels did this off season to put on weight. He went to Chipotle, asked him his order. He said dirty rice with like the double steak, sour cream, cheese, guac, does not care that it's extra. So they're still doing that. The difference is that they have Rob Glass to help put on weight, but also maintain speed, which is a big factor when you're putting on weight.
The difference is they got that NIL money to pay for guac.
Facts. Facts. Because I will say, at one point, I was starting to look sloppy out there. Like, it was not good. I remember, you know, every single cornerback, we had to be, I think, it was like 9% body fat, where the safeties could be at 12% body fat. And there was one year where I came in, I was like 15% body fat, bro. I was like, yo, I just got carried away with the sour cream. Yeah, it got pretty bad there for a while. But, you know, we had to tone it. We had to bring it back in. Had to hone it in.
We're back on track. And we're back on track in this podcast as well.
Talk all related.
A little bit about the offensive line and their impact on the running game. Cole Birmingham said,
speaking of sloppy, just kidding.
Sloppy, kidding. So on Saturday, Cole Birmingham said that this is like the first time the O-line has been this deep since he's been in Stillwater. And he said with confidence that Oklahoma State will have the best offensive line in the Big 12. How encouraging is that to hear?
I mean, it sounds good, but I'm going to have to see it to believe it. The best O-line in the Big 12? All right.
When's the last time?
Prove me wrong, honestly. Like, I would love to be proven wrong, but I just I'm going to need to see some evidence of that. I respect the fact that we have so many guys that have experience, but just because you have experience doesn't mean you're automatically better, right? You guys have been pretty bad. The injuries have been really bad. And you got to obviously elevate your game and then stay healthy. So, yeah, please, please do that.
Yeah, I mean, what's it been like 7 years since we could really stand on our O-line and be like, yo, that is a great unit right there. That's probably been the problem year in and year out that we just have. Yeah, that's the area, the unit that we just have the biggest problem trying to figure out and get consistent on our offense. You know, you talk about the best O-line in the Big 12 conference. Look at those guys at that, you know, that other university in Oklahoma, and they got some guys that are projected to go in the first round in the NFL draft. So, you know, just because they're individual talents doesn't mean, of course, that they can play well as a unit. So hopefully we get that unity going at the Oklahoma State O-line, and, you know, we could put some things together.
Time will tell. In 23 days, we'll get to see them out in action.
Well, that game's not going to count.
I'm just kidding.
Hey. Yeah. Hey, it'll count. I'm still going to be fired up. I'm still going to be wearing orange. I'm still going to be ripping my shirt off whenever we make a big play. We're going to be all right.
If our running backs put up like 400 yards, then it's going to count.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, if our running backs put up 400 yards, I don't care which team it's against. I don't know. I'm doing something crazy.
No pressure, guys. Just ball out. On the other side of the ball, moving to defense, starting with the linebackers, the biggest name at linebacker is Colin Oliver. He said in a piece on OSU Max, he's not really a linebacker. He's an all-around backer playing all over the field. He loves Coach Nardo and what he brings to the team, both on and off the field. What's interesting, though, we all know that Colin Oliver had a breakout freshman season in 2021 with 10.5 sacks and 15.5 tackles for a loss. He was the Big 12 Defensive Freshman of the Year. Last season, his productivity dropped by 50%, had 5 sacks and 7 tackles for a loss. How do you think switching from DE to linebacker can get him back to 2021 form?
No, I mean, it's really interesting because he was used so differently, you know, in the 2 years that we've seen him. You know, some could say, okay, was he figured out? Like, did people just watch film on him or were able to just stop him better? That's not the case. He was just used so much differently last year than he was under Jim Knowles, right, his first year. So I'm really, really curious to see how they're going to utilize him in this defense with Brian Nardo. The fact that he speaks so highly of Nardo and that he likes him so much lets me know that they're planning on utilizing him a lot more like they did his freshman year. But I think it was easy after his freshman year to just get caught up in his athleticism and seeing how great of a football player overall he was, and then asking him to do more when the thing that he does best is get after the quarterback. So we'll see. And, you know, not for nothing, I think it's worth mentioning that there are a lot of things that aren't going to show up on the stat sheet that he actually did a really great job of when it comes to especially just interrupting a play and preventing the ball to go in one direction that the quarterback was looking at and making him go to a second, third, fourth option. But we need more playmaking from him. And I think that he's up to that task.
Yeah, I think for me, the biggest thing is just the inconsistency between the defensive coordinators, and not even necessarily like how he was used, but the fact that it seemed like everybody loved Jim Knowles. I didn't hear as much of that with Derek Mason. Yeah. And it kind of seemed like he was just here as a rental, like he wasn't fully bought into Oklahoma State. Right. It's hard to say that from the outside looking in, but now we're looking at it from the other side and seeing Nardo come in. He's putting forth this effort and everybody's buying in with him. And that leads me to believe that Colin Oliver is just going to be able to, you know, bounce right back up, straight up. So I really think that it does matter with Gundy's continuity and how he has the coaching staff. But more importantly, that, you know, guys like Nardo are coming in. It seems like he really cares about his players. He wants the best for them. And then the scheme kind of plays as a secondary factor, right? Like, huge, to be able to set him up for success. And I mean, if your coach doesn't give off that kind of vibe, your game will suffer. Like, you'll suffer in practice. You'll suffer in the games. Like, you're just not enjoying yourself. You're not having fun playing football. And whenever that happens, you're not going to be as good as you can be. So I think we're going to see a big bounce back year from him.
Yeah, I think honestly, he's going to be one of those players that, like, you can't really label him a defensive end. You can't label him a linebacker either. Probably edge is the best way to just categorize him. Like, he's an edge, and he's going to be asked to do a lot of things from that edge position. So that's probably the piece of the defense that I'm the most excited about. We talked about, you know, Ladarius Webb being listed as hybrid. I kind of think that Colin Oliver is going to be one of those quote unquote hybrid type of players on his defense as well.
Plus, I will say this, kind of going back to Nardo, I think maybe we will actually start to see the transfer portal stuff slow down because people are going to be in love with Nardo so much that they're going to want to stay. Whereas we did tend to lose a lot of guys from last year with Derek Mason. And even though he wasn't coming back, it was kind of like, all right, there's got to be something better out there for me. I think we might actually see, you know, the brakes pumped a little bit with the transfer portal, at least for Oklahoma State. So I would love to see that, even though it would be less content for us to talk about. It's totally fine.
And shout out to Derek Mason, who's going to be joining the SEC Network
right
this fall.
Here's what I found interesting about this Nardo talk and the defense. And, you know, we had one of the top defenses in 2021, one of the not top defenses in 2022. Although on Saturday, Xavier Benson, who was one of two returning defensive players to start every game last season, the other is DB Corey Black. Benson said that the biggest change defensively is guys understanding they can end up at any spot and they understand the whole concept, not just their specific position. Yeah. Eve, you were a DB. Why is that important?
Yeah, I mean, you have to know where everybody is, right? Like, whenever I think about that statement, last year, the weakest link of our defense was probably our linebacking core. And it got weaker whenever Mason Cobb left. you know, Mason Cobb was arguably the best player on our defense. Well, you know, Kendall Daniels, Mason Cobb, one or two best players on our defense, and he's gone. So there's a void that is left to fill. Whenever you can understand what everybody on the team, or at least on your side of the ball, is doing, what it does is it actually creates a lot more freedom. And by freedom, I'm saying it means, okay, I know my responsibility and I know exactly what they're doing. And that allows me to operate freely within the restrictions, quote unquote restrictions or boundaries that are allowed for me. So if everybody trusts that I know exactly what I'm doing, I can disguise before the snap. I can roll and I can get in and out of different schemes in between snaps a lot easier. Right. So, I mean, it's just whenever you can trust the man next to you, the man on the other side of the field, it really creates a sense of freedom that leads to organized chaos as a defensive unit.
Spot on, man. I feel like that's pretty underrated, to have trust, chemistry. There's a lot of really talented players out there, and then they're just put in a spot where they're expected to kind of do everything on their own and no support, where – yeah, if you get that, you know your brother over there has got your back just in case. Being able to play as a unit is literally, like, that's why football is the ultimate team sport. And I think that it really comes into play more for defense, because you can kind of get away with stuff whenever you got the ball in your hands as an offensive player, making guys miss and whatnot. So,
yeah, in 2011, whenever we led the NCAA in turnovers and we were four turnovers away from actually having the NCAA record, I remember – on any given Saturday, you had Markell Martin at the safety position communicating to Jamie Blatnick at the defensive end position, who's communicating to James Thomas in the linebacker star position. And everybody was in unison and everybody knew exactly what was going on at all times. And it's actually pretty amazing to think about how much, quote unquote, luck can be created just by simply understanding the assignment and knowing exactly why. Right? Why a play is being called, why a blitz is coming from a certain side of the field and not the other side of the field. And that just leads to beautiful, beautiful chaos. It's not something that happens by accident, but it truly has to be something that's intentional and on purpose by all three levels of the defense.
Before we wrap this episode up, guys, who are you most excited to watch this season, or who do you think the X factor will be?
Well, for me, Meg, I actually did watch you and Deion Amade on OSU Max this last Saturday. So thank you for that, for entertaining me for a couple of hours there. But because of that, the interviews led me to, hear some of these guys for the first time. And that actually, like, plays a big part in how I perceive them moving forward, you know? So, what I really love, and who I'm, you know, obviously I'm cheering for all these guys, right? You're Oklahoma State. You want to be here. I love you. But then whenever you interview and you're respectful and you have a big smile on your face and you're excited to be here and I can see that, then I'm going to cheer for you even more. And a lot of guys were like that on Saturday. Whereas in the past, I'm not going to name names, but man, I would just get so tired and bored from listening to some of these guys interview. I feel like there's an energy around this program that we haven't seen in a long time. And that makes me really excited. So I just want to see that. I just wanted to give that a shout out. And because of that, Jaden Nixon, you are the guy that I'm going to be watching for. Hopefully you kind of turn into the X factor. If it's kind of as a feature or a running back where you're coming in as a supporting role and you're able to rip off some long runs with your speed, or whether it's you returning kicks, I hope that you're able to just blow games wide open with that speed and with the talent, because man, after hearing you, like, that's, you deserve it. Like, you deserve the world. So I hope you go out and get it this year.
Yeah, no, I think that Megan and Deion did such a great job of actually creating a welcoming environment and allowing the players to feel comfortable and kind of showcase their personalities. So, props to you, Meg. Props to Deion as well for the great job that y'all did on those OSU Max interviews. Hair flips all around. I'm a defensive guy. I love, watching defensive players and looking at defensive film. But in the Big 12 Conference, man, offense is going to matter. And especially with, the great exodus that we had this past season, I'm just looking forward to seeing Brandon Presley. We got a guy that's returning, a guy that really, really cares about the program. A guy had the opportunity to leave Oklahoma State, but he said, no, this is where I want to be. Homegrown, loved OSU my entire life. And Biletnikoff Award finalist right here, or at least he's on the watch list going into the season. So Brandon Presley is the guy, man. I love just seeing the football in his hands. I still don't think that we've even seen close to his potential and what he can do for our offense, how creative we can truly be whenever we get the ball in his hands, even out of the backfield, right? In reverses and deep, shallow, short, all of it. In the return game, that's just, you know, that's my guy right there. And a guy who's also really, really easy to root for just from, you know, whenever you get to know him a little bit. So, yeah, Brandon Presley, that's my guy.
I like both those guys. I said it a couple weeks ago, I'm excited to see Jaden Bray back out there. I think between him and Blaine Green both coming back from injury, they became very close last season because they were both sidelined together. With Brandon Presley, Dejon Stribling, we have some good groups, good position groups on this team when you really take a step back and look at it. Jaden Nixon is probably one of, if not my favorite guy on the roster. He's the best. He's such a fun personality. And I want all of them to have success, but I'm like, Jaden, like, I really want you to have success because you're just so wholesome. That being said, I said it on Saturday, I'm saying it now, I'm most excited for our offensive line. Talk to Preston Wilson at Big 12 Media Days. Talk to Cole Birmingham this past weekend. They are the most confident I've ever seen a bunch of offensive linemen.
Love it.
They feel like they have a lot to prove. They love the new scheme. They're super excited about an increase on the run game, which obviously puts a lot more pressure on them. I'm excited to see them in full strength for the first time in years. And there are some beastly defensive lines joining the Big 12. We've talked about them the last 2 weeks. So to see our O-line go up against some of those D-lines is going to be a really good battle in the trenches.
It all starts up front. Yeah, that's probably the unit that I'm the second most excited about seeing, definitely, is the offensive line.
Wow. 23 days, guys.
23 days. Let's go. I can't wait.
And then back to school. Well, I mean, people are going back to school. But when I was in high school and grade school, we went back to school after Labor Day. So college football kickoff also meant start of school. So not in Oklahoma. They start like now, but
You got to get warmed up before football season kicks off. That's how I look at it. We're not in school for academics. We ain't here to play school. We're here to play football.
I hope you new teams that are coming in at the Big 12 conference didn't come here for school.
Meg's rolling at us. She's like, she's from the Northeast, the academic elite up there. She's like, you Big 12ers.
Yes. That's so good. That's so good.
I am not academically. I'm a good student, but let's not get it twisted. I was talking about earlier how terrible I was at math with my mom, but neither here nor there. This is not Meg Academia podcast. This is Believe in OK State. We want to thank you all for listening to another episode presented by Bet Online. Of course, like, share, subscribe, follow, comment, do all the things. And of course, go Pokes.
Go Pokes.
Go Pokes.